This last summer, while we were on our sabbatical, I had the opportunity to visit with a friend of mine for many, many years. My friend Mitch and I had played Little League Baseball together. We had gone to school all the way, elementary school, all the way up into college, and hadn't seen each other for a very long time. We managed to reconnect in the last few years through Facebook, and while I had some extra time this summer, we decided to get together and have lunch. And while we were having lunch together, my friend Mitch told me a very interesting story about himself. He told me about some trouble that he'd gotten into in the years after college and some really hard experiences that he had gone through. And one of the pieces of trouble that he experienced was that he developed a dependency on alcohol and got into a mess and a quagmire as a result of all of that. And then he described to me the process by which he was able to move out of that and into a better life. And the way that Mitch put it was very, very interesting. He said, "As I look back on that now, it's as though the real me was always there waiting to step out. But it took the support of community, of family and friends for the real me to emerge again." We're thinking together in the months of September, October, and one more Sunday following today about a theme called Run the New Program. I've been encouraging you over these weeks to think about the opportunity and the privilege and the calling that we have to run a different kind of program than the ones which we seem to come running at a default level in our lives. We've been thinking about the ways that our old programs cause conflict and challenge, and the ways that we don't seem to be able to do the things that we want to do, and the things that we want to do we can't seem to do. It really is as though we are running an old program, or I've suggested a couple of times, an old program is running us. And through these weeks, I've been asking you to consider the invitation that we have to run a new program, a program that empowers the authentic person that you really are to step out and emerge and live. This morning, I have the happy, happy announcement that I get to tell you a good story. We've looked at some crummy ones. We've had to look at some stories of some of our heroes in the book of Genesis who have not fared very well. We have looked at some stories of oppression and some stories of injustice and some stories of slavery. This morning, I get to tell you the story of one of our heroes who does well, but not without an extraordinary challenge. We're taking a look this morning at Joseph. Now, I want to remind you, Joseph is the last at this time of the sons of Jacob. You'll remember last week we saw Joseph being sold off into slavery by his older brothers who were so livid with jealousy toward their brother. He's been brought now down into the land of Egypt. And in between these two times, Joseph has become the chief over the household of a man in political authority in Egypt by the name of Potiphar. The book of Genesis says it very simply, describes how it is that Joseph came to this important position. The book of Genesis says simply, the Lord was with him. Though a slave, everything that he did seemed to flourish. Potiphar, who had purchased him as his slave, began to notice this, so that by the time of our text, Joseph is now over charge of all of the household of Potiphar. This is what that means. This is what this means. This means at the end of the month, when the spreadsheets all come out balanced and the money has been managed well, it's because Joseph has been overseeing all of that stuff. It means at the end of the month, when all of the subcontractors have come to the house and they've fixed the leaky roofs and they've taken care of all of the challenges with the fences, they look back and they say, well, Joseph was the one who's in charge of that. It means that at the end of the day, when the hot tub has been installed properly, what a lucky guy that Potiphar was, Joseph was the one who is responsible. And so here we have this picture of Joseph working for Potiphar and doing all things extraordinarily well until the day of the challenge. He is a very, very handsome fellow. And one day, Potiphar's wife takes note of him. And she attempts to seduce him. "Sleep with me," she says. Joseph says, No. I can't do that. You see, I've been given responsibility for all of the stewardship of your husband's household. I oversee all of these things. He has put everything into my care except for you. You are the one thing in his household that I must not touch." And so he refuses. Interestingly, Joseph says, How could I sin not against Potiphar? How could I sin against God? Well, it doesn't end here. The seducing goes on day after day, we're told in the book of Genesis. It continues. And day after day, Joseph finds the courage, the strength, the freedom, day after day, to say no. The story that we have before us is a story about integrity. That's why I love to tell this story. This is a story about integrity. This is a story about someone who is true through and through. Did you know that that's what the word integrity actually means? We have this notion that integrity means something like somebody who works really hard to have good character. That's not what it means. Integrity means somebody who is the same through and through. Who they are on Sunday is who they are on Thursday. Who they are down here is who they are up here. They are the same through and through. These columns here in our sanctuary, these columns have integrity. What that means is that the cement that by which they are built is the same through and through. If there was a crack in it, if there was a fissure, if there was a weakness, we would say it doesn't have integrity. These columns have integrity. These columns are like Joseph. Joseph is a man who is the same through and through, at least at this part of his journey. Now, the temptation with Potiphar's wife is not over yet, as we just read. She continues her efforts to seduce young Joseph, until the day when it is just the two of them who are in Potiphar's house alone now. All of the servants have gone out in various places. The two of them are together. She seizes the opportunity and she grasps a hold of his cloak. Realizing the danger of his situation, Joseph turns and runs outside of the house as fast as he can go. She's standing now holding his cloak in her hand, and her anger and her disappointment at being dismissed come to its full fledge at this moment. She begins to scream. She turns the tables. She says that it is he who has tried to seduce her. Word gets to her husband. Her husband is furious now with Joseph. Joseph is thrown into prison, and that's where our story comes to its conclusion, at least for today. But here's the great irony of this story. There are two main characters in this text of Scripture. There is the wife of Potiphar, who is a very, very powerful woman, who is accustomed to getting what she wants. And there's Joseph, who at the beginning of the story is a slave. But by the time that the story is finished being told, we learn it is Potiphar's wife who is actually a slave, and Joseph who is actually free. Because one of them is true, and one of them is not. This is a story about integrity. This is also a story about a very, very powerful old tape that is playing in our world, in our hearts, in our lives. You may have grown tired of hearing that. Each Sunday I've said, this is a very, very powerful program. This one is a very, very powerful program. And the very powerful old program that I hear described in this text of Scripture is what I want to call the tyranny of the impulse. The tyranny of the impulse is that very powerful message that comes to our hearts and our minds that says, I want what I want when I want it. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. There are some very wonderful urges that we experience in our lives. When you're driving down the road or when you're out for a walk in October in Michigan, and you have the urge to look up at the trees because their color is just so resplendent with glory and beauty. That's a wonderful urge. When you have the urge to say to your spouse, I love you, that's a wonderful urge. There are some tremendous urges. The one that I'm describing, though, this morning is the one that says, I want what I want when I want it. The old program this morning that we're looking at is the tyranny of the impulse. I hope as we've gone through these old program messages, one of the things that you've noticed is that they are always interested in a quick fix. All of the programs are interested in finding ways toward happiness or toward peacefulness or toward comfort in a very, very fast and impatient way. The tyranny of the impulse is perhaps the fastest of all. This is the one that moves at the speed of light. Let me pause for just a moment and give you a little bit of a refresher in how our brains work. This is Brain 101, which is about as far as my brain can take me. When our brains see something, when our eyes or ears, our senses see something that looks inviting, something that has promise for bringing comfort or enjoyment or shelter or whatever it might be, it sends a message to our brains that this could be a possibly good thing. When you and I follow through, what takes place is that in our brain, there is a neural pathway that takes place when we follow that, when we act upon that impulse. There's a little neural pathway that takes place in our brain so that the second time, it's easier to follow. The neural pathway is strengthened. The little neural connections in our brain is strengthened in that place, and then it makes it easier to do it again, and then it makes it easier to do it again, and I think you see where this goes. After a while, we don't have neural pathways. We have neural super freeways. And these things, which initially just occurred as ideas, now occur as things that we simply have to do and we have to have. The problem is, this old sick program is working at the speed of light. The superhighways are becoming larger and larger and larger. And before long, these things that we've acted on at the level of impulse become issues of our character. Here's the problem. Folks, nobody ever sets out to be a creepy old man. Nobody. Nobody ever, ever, ever as a young man thought, what I want to be in my 80s or 70s or 60s is that man that everybody on the street fears because he's creepy. They got there by following that impulse, which became a neural connection, which became a superhighway, decision after decision, after decision, after decision. Nobody ever wanted to be that person whose blood pressure goes up and down with the stock market. Nobody ever wanted to live that anxiously toward money. They got there by following an impulse that led to another impulse, that led to neural connections, that led to more neural connections, by which they were always functioning out of worry about money. Nobody ever chose early in their life to become that person. Nobody ever chose to be that person who's isolated, who doesn't have good relationships, the person who would rather watch TV all day long than have good, meaningful relationships. Nobody wanted to be that person in their 20s. They became that person decision after decision after decision after decision. It happens one slavish impulse at a time. We had this person in a church in another city, not anyone that anybody here would know. I'm going to call him Joe. By the way, if you wonder why I changed the names of people in other places, it's because I'm surprised sometimes to find out who listens to our podcasts. So I want to call him Joe. Joe was a member of our congregation. He was a fellow who was doing quite well. He was a guy that you would invite to be part of your Bible study and you wouldn't think twice about it. Nobody knew that during the time that Joe was carrying on as a good member of our congregation, he was also making some very shady financial decisions in his work. They started in small ways, we found out, little ways that he bent the rules, little ways that he cut some corners, but one decision led to another decision, led to another decision, and then one day we were all stunned to find out that federal investigators were looking at him because of decisions that he had been making and that our friend Joe would end up paying a considerable price because of decisions that he had made over a long period of time. This was not a person who anyone would say was a terrible person of character. This was simply a person who made decision after decision after decision after decision that eventually landed him in tremendous trouble. When we think of Potiphar's wife in this regard, we might begin to see her in different light. This is a lady who's become accustomed to being powerful. There is no doubt that this is a lady who's gotten used to getting her way and having what she wants. And she has finally come up to an instance where she can't get what she wants when she wants it. We can maybe understand her now in a slightly different life, this woman who is furious and enraged that she cannot get the one who she wants when she wants him. And it's worth saying once again, in a remarkably ironic fashion, our story is telling the tale of one who used to be a slave who is now free, and one who is powerful, but who is actually a slave. You and I might be tempted to read this story, and we might be tempted to say, boy, that Joseph, he is a man of extraordinary willpower. Woo! He put a lot of energy into exerting this sort of willpower. But if we did,
we'd be reading the text differently than the text is. You see, Genesis does not say that Joseph is a person of integrity because he tries harder. That might work for you a little bit on the treadmill. It won't work for you here. Genesis says that Joseph is a man of integrity because, this is important, the Lord was with him. And he knew that the Lord was with him. In fact, not only does Joseph know that the Lord is with him, Joseph knows that he is the bearer of God's dreams. Do you remember last Sunday we looked at those stories in which Joseph had been given these dreams in which he would be the leader over his brothers, and dreams in which he would be the leader over his father and his mother. And if Joseph misunderstood them in egotistical ways in the beginning, we can understand. There's reason to believe that by this time Joseph is beginning to understand the dreams in a different way. He's beginning to recognize that these are God's dreams of the sort of leader that he, Joseph, is to be, to bring righteousness and goodness to other people. And I want to remind you that the very same thing that we've said about Potiphar's wife, the very same things that we've said about the way that the tyranny of impulse is formed in us over time, the very same thing is true of Joseph, only what's taking place in Joseph is the formation of holiness. Over time, one who is learning that the Lord is with him, and one who is learning over time to yield to the goodness and the power of God rather than yielding to the impulses and the quick fix. We have to guess a little bit as we read the text how this has happened. I have to imagine that in that time, from the time that Joseph was thrown into a pit by his brothers and sold off to the Ishmaelite group that was traveling down toward Egypt, I have to imagine that somewhere along the line, by the time he landed in Egypt and there was sold as a slave to Potiphar, I have to imagine that somewhere in this experience, Joseph began to discern that God is working in every present circumstance to bring good. Somewhere along the line, Joseph learned that in every situation, the living God is working to bring about the good. And that the task of those who belong to God, those who know that God is with them, is to learn to yield to the good that God is doing in this present moment. I have to believe that Joseph got that right one day, yielded to the power of God's work in his life, and then the next day he yielded to the power of God's good in his life, and then the next day he learned to yield to the power of God at work in his life. Joseph was not the person who could stand up to Potiphar's wife on that day. He was becoming that person for a long, long time. And this is how holiness is built into our lives. Think of Joseph. Think of this extraordinary character. Think of this opportunity that I get to tell a really, really good story. One of the rare opportunities in the book of Genesis, to be very honest. Think of Joseph and the integrity that he shows in this particular situation, and then let your imagination move forward a little bit. Let your imagination roll down the line generation after generation after generation, because you see, the truth is, Joseph's life is barely a hint of a life that is to come generations later. And there's going to come a day when somebody else bearing God's dreams stands up and begins to preach. And this one who bears God's dreams is going to proclaim the dream to everyone. He's going to announce, "The kingdom of God is at hand. The time of God's power breaking out into our lives and our world is right here, right now, and it's taking place through me. Turn around and join your lives to the good news." You know who I'm talking about. You know that Joseph's life is just barely a hint, a shadowy hint of the one who's going to come and who is going to spend his time with the sinners and the tax collectors, because they're the ones that are hungry and want to change. And you know there's going to come a day when he's going to go into the lepers' colonies, the people who were excluded from the fellowship of Israel. He's going to go be with those people because they are the ones who are in need of help and they are in the need of comfort. And here's the thing. Here's the thing we must understand. There's going to come a day when the one who lived his life with absolute perfect integrity, Jesus of Nazareth, don't miss this. There's going to come a day when the one who lived his life with absolute integrity will be disintegrated for our sake. You see, that's what he's saying when he sits with his disciples and he says, "This bread is my body, which is broken, disintegrated for you." The one of integrity, broken up for those who are not. And his blood poured out for us that we may be whole again. Do you see the depth and the power and the quality of the love of God in Jesus that is broken and poured out for you? Several weeks ago, if my memory serves me correctly, it was on the very first Sunday that we were doing these Run the New Program series. Our orchestra played. It might have been the second Sunday. I don't remember for sure. Now, some of you may not have noticed this. Our orchestra came up here, and they began to play the prelude, and they were simply awful. They were just bad. There's no other word for it. They were off-key. They were discordant. I do not have a musician's ear. I could tell something was very, very amiss that day. I wondered what was going on. And then there was a very brief interlude where things started to get right, and then they began playing the music as it was intended to be played. I didn't know they were going to do this. They did it on purpose. You may have noticed. You may have thought our orchestra has lost it for a moment. They did it in both services, and they pulled it together in both services, and you may now be able to put the pieces together and realize that what they were doing is they were artistically, they were helping us to imagine life under an old program, one in which we're operating at the power of impulse all the time, bad habits ruling over our lives. We're at one another. Our world is a mess. You could probably picture that in the way they were playing. And then they began to play the music as it was intended to be played, and you heard the new program that was running. What I want to talk about right now is the space in the middle. You see, there was this very brief time, I wish we had a recording of it, when it was starting to get right. There was this very, very brief time when that awful stuff was beginning to turn into the beautiful stuff, and it was the space in the middle that I want to talk about here for just a moment. You see, friends, we're invited to run a new program. We really are. The New Testament describes it this way. The New Testament says, "Don't walk by the power of the flesh. Live by the power of the Spirit." The Apostle Paul says, there's nothing that can separate us from the love of God in Jesus Christ. You and I are invited to live in a new program in which love is at the very center of our lives. We're invited to be people who have a center of power and a center of love and a center of security. And we're invited to be people who live that out in our daily relationships. But the thing is, if we're really honest, most of us are living someplace in the middle. We're in that scene between the scenes. And there are times when it's still a little bit discordant, but there's also a lot of beauty that's coming through. And I'm saying all of this to say, if that's where you find yourself, I think you're pretty normal. And I think it's a hard thing to switch from running an old program to running a new program. But for heaven's sakes, isn't that 100% of what we're about as God's people? Isn't the reason that you're here today because you've run an old program? You hear the beauty of a new program, and you're in transition between the two. And isn't the reason that you're here today because we need one another to move from place A to place C while we're living here in the midst in place B? I don't know about you, but I do. One of the things that's going to be required of us to run the new program is to let go. To let go of the old, to let go of the urges, to let go of the tyranny of the moment, to let go of those impulses that say, "I want what I want, and I want it now." That may sound like I just said to you, "Try harder." I really didn't say that. What I said was, we're going to have to learn to let go, to let go, to let go. I want to tell you a story about myself, on myself this week. I got home one evening this week, and it had been kind of a long day, and I was tired, and I was a little bit grouchy. Okay, I was maybe more than a little bit grouchy, and I just wanted to relax for a few minutes in front of the television. And so I turned on Netflix, We don't have cable any longer, so it's our only option. I turned on Netflix and the Wi-Fi wasn't working. And I was irritated. The Wi-Fi wasn't working. And so I went upstairs to try to figure out why the Wi-Fi wasn't working, and I started scrambling through some wires as though I was going to fix something. And it still wasn't working. And then I got mad because the wires were in a place that were hard for me to get to, and so I got even more frustrated. And here's what was taking place in me. The tyranny of I want what I want, and I want it right now, had me. Now, let's take a deep breath at this moment. Suppose you're in that place this week, and there's something that you want, and you want it, and you want it right now. Try this. Take a deep breath. Take five of them if you want to. Offer a prayer, because the Lord is really with you in that position, in that situation. Offer a simple prayer. It might be the words of Psalm 25:1 that I've mentioned to you several times in this series. To you, O Lord, I lift my soul. O my God, I trust in you. Go for a walk. Clear your mind. Do what you need to do. You see, the truth is, we really can let go of the tyranny of the impulse that says, I have to have it now. And the beauty is that when you do, your brain forms a little neural network. And the next time you're back at that same place, it's a little bit easier to follow that same neural network. You take the deep breaths the next time, you go for the walk the next time. You find it just a little bit easier to let go. And again and again, and before you know it, you've got a little superhighway that's forming in your brain that's not for the wrong reasons, it's for all of the right ones. Do you see? One of the things that we need to do is to let go. And the other thing that we need to do is to yield. Immediately after this story and immediately before this story, the writer of Genesis uses this beautiful phrase I've mentioned to you several times already this morning. The Lord was with Joseph. Here's one who, over the course of his life, learned to yield to a power greater than himself that could set him free. And by the end of the story, we witness a man who is extraordinarily, remarkably free, as we can be as well, one day at a time, practicing holiness right now, letting go of those things that we need to let go, and taking up what we need to take up, and learning to yield right now. And all of this is possible because of the one of perfect integrity who is broken for us. Remember, on the night on which he was betrayed, Jesus took the bread and he disintegrated it. And he said, "This bread is my body, which is broken, disintegrated for you." And he took the cup and he said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, the one that was promised by Jeremiah, the covenant in which God promised that the time was coming, that the law of God would no longer be written in stone, but would be written upon our hearts." Jesus said, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is poured out for you." Would you pray with me, please?